Last lecture, we studied Lorentz model, its bifurcation diagram, how to quantify sensitivity on the Lorentz attractor. So today we will study a bit more about Lyapunov exponents. That is a way to characterize sensitivity on the on attractors, and then we will study Poincaré maps and a bit about discrete dynamical systems. So, how many of you are aware about Lyapunov exponents? Okay. So, it characterizes sensitivity to initial conditions. This is one of the most famous ways to quantify chaos in chaotic systems, actually. So if we consider an n-dimensional phase space, like n-dimensional continuous time dynamical system, and if we take x naught and x naught prime to be two closely spaced initial conditions, then with time evolution, this will be, let this be xt, and this will be x of t plus delta xt. And if you use Euclidean norm, which is a measure of the distance between these two trajectories, that will be in general, this Lyapunov exponent will be this number. So this is the distance between trajectories at time t. This is the distance between trajectories at time zero. So consider the Lorentz model that we are talking about. It is a three-dimensional model. So if I plot log of as a function of time. Any idea what we will see?
A straight line.
Yeah. So, a straight line?
For the initial part, at least.
Yeah, that's right. So, with some wiggles, actually, it will not be completely straight line, but you can fit it with a straight line. With some wiggles, you can see that it acts as a straight line, and after that, it will kind of. So, initially straight line, but after that, it saturates. Why does this saturate?
Bounded.
Yeah, so this is our system is bounded, right? So it cannot grow exponentially apart for infinite time. It can grow exponentially apart only for some time till it spans the whole bounded space. After that, it will show a constant type behavior. So still we use here time tends to infinity in the definition. That is because As you decrease the difference between the two initial conditions, this d, as you take zero, the time for which it will show a linear behavior will increase. So in the limit d tends to zero, we can take time tends to infinity. But for practical purposes, like we can't take it to zero, like we are restricted by our computational abilities, right? So, like in the next tutorial, we will study Lorentz model and we will compute Lyapunov exponent for the model. And we will see, like, as you decrease d here, like the Euclidean norm value between the two initial conditions that we are considering, the time for which you see this linear type behavior will increase. So we'll see that in tutorial. So the other thing is, for an n-dimensional system, there is something called Lyapunov spectrum. So using this, you will get only one number, right? That is actually the maximal Lyapunov exponent of the system. And yeah, one thing. So for chaotic system, lambda will be, what will be the sign of lambda?
Positive.
Yeah. So for chaotic systems, there will be at least one positive Lyapunov exponent. Like the maximal Lyapunov exponent will be positive if we are just talking about the maximal one. So for chaotic systems, the maximal Lyapunov exponent is going to be positive. But if the system is non-chaotic, then the maximal can be negative or zero. Does that make sense? So it is like exponential divergence or exponential convergence. For example, we take a fixed point attractor. So here, this attractor is a strange attractor on which chaos happens. So for strange attractors, this is what we will see. On the other hand, if we take a fixed point attractor, for example, then there is exponential convergence from all sides, right? So exponential convergence, so that will imply a negative lambda, basically. This will go something like this on the other side. So a maximal the maximal Lyapunov exponent of a system being positive characterizes that the system is chaotic in dynamical systems. So you can see that we are characterizing chaos here in terms of trajectories of the system. And when we will study quantum chaos, like there are no trajectories there, right? In terms of these XYZ variables become observables there, right? With a certain standard deviation in general. And there is Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. So you can't determine position and momentum, for example, simultaneously with infinite precision in quantum systems. So that is one of the issues why you can't define Lyapunov exponent or characterize chaos in quantum systems the same way we do it in classical dynamical systems. So, another thing, these Lyapunov exponents are generally properties of an attractor. Do you think there can be multiple attractors in any system? Yeah, so there can be multiple attractors, like in last lecture we saw in Lorentz model, there was a parameter value where we saw that the fixed point was still stable, but there was a strange attractor in the system. So if you started very, very close to the fixed point, the basin of attraction of the fixed point had shrunk very small. So if you started very, very close to the fixed point, you will go to the fixed point. The trajectory will converge towards the fixed point. But if you started a little bit away, it showed a strange attractor. So that was an example where there are two attractors. One is like a fixed point attractor, not a chaotic one, and the other is a strange attractor, which is a chaotic one. So there are other cases, other systems also, where you see like multiple strange attractors, not just like a fixed point or a limit cycle coexisting with a strange attractor. So one of the system I looked up is called Newton-Lipkin system. Newton-Lipkin system. If anyone is interested, they can go and look. So this system has two strange attractors, and if you vary the parameters, I saw another paper in which they had found three strange attractors coexisting. So the thing is, like, if you start with any initial condition, to which strange attractor will it go to? What will it depend on? Yeah, initial condition, like in every strange attractor will have a basin of attraction. So if you start with an initial condition in the basin of attraction of attractor 1, it will go to attractor 1, versus if you start in the basin of attraction of attractor 2, it will go to attractor 2. So the thing is, this will imply that there can be multiple Lyapunov exponents in the system as well. So every attractor has its own Lyapunov exponent. So it's not like you can always talk about Lyapunov exponent for a system. Only if there is only one attractor in the system, or if all the attractors like are non-chaotic, that is a different case. But if there are multiple attractors, especially if there are multiple strange attractors, then you can have multiple positive Lyapunov exponents. Like, this value will depend on which attractor you are going to. So in practice, since Lyapunov exponent is attached to an attractor, when we do the numerical computation for this, for example, in Lorentz model, it is best to just take an initial condition and evolve it for some time. Let it settle down on the attractor first, let the transients die out. So it will, after some time, it will settle down on the attractor. Then take another closely spaced initial condition on the attractor, when it settles down on the attractor. So this is, suppose x naught, this is x transient time. So take another x prime, which is very close to this, and then evolve them together, and then compute this. So that will give you the Lyapunov exponent of that attractor. Does that make sense? And you can ask if you have any questions, any doubts.
Can you repeat this point again?
I'm sorry?
Can you repeat this last point again?
Yeah, so I'm saying
Mm.
can't draw a very good a strange attractor, but it is something like this, right? The Lorentz attractor that you must have seen, that we saw in the last class as well. So if I start with any initial condition here, for example, if I evolve it with time, it will evolve to this strange attractor in some time. If this is an attractor, it will evolve to it if this initial condition lies in the basin of attraction. So evolve it for some time and say that to be time to be transient time, actually. So evolve it for some time, then you will reach on this attractor or very, very close to this attractor. So then take this initial. So to compute Lyapunov exponent or maximal Lyapunov exponent, we need two initial conditions which are very, very closely spaced. So I'm just saying that instead of taking two initial random initial conditions in the space, take one initial condition, evolve it for some time, let the transient die out, that is by evolving it for some time until it comes very, very close to the attractor, and then take another initial condition here, which is very, very closely spaced, and then compute this, like, you know, the initial distance between the two initial conditions now, and you evolve both of them with time and compute d, and then plot this basically log of d at time t versus d at time 0 versus time, and see till what time you see a linear behavior. Then you take that time, so, and for this time with this data, do a linear fit to obtain the Lyapunov exponent. So yeah, you should not just do a linear fit blindly without seeing this curve till what time you are seeing a linear behavior in the graph, actually. So overall, the thing I was telling is that there can be multiple strange attractors in the system. So suppose there is another strange attractor here, something like this. So if you, this can have a different basin of attraction, this. So if you start with an initial condition here, this can go to here or something like that. So every strange attractor may have different value of Lyapunov exponents.
But this is not the spectrum you were talking about.
This is not the spectrum. This is just the maximal Lyapunov exponent. But this is interesting that a system can have multiple maximal Lyapunov exponents. All of them can be correct. So if you do and if you don't, like in three dimensions for Lorentz model, it is still, you are still able to visualize the system, right? But there can be higher dimensional system where you are not able to visualize the system. So you don't know whether there are multiple strange attractors or a single one.
Yeah.
So you just start with some initial condition and calculate the Lyapunov exponent. You may be getting different Lyapunov exponent. So it will be very confusing. Okay, you are getting, for one, you are getting value one, and for other, you are getting value two, for example. So how to make sense of that data? If you can't visualize that there are multiple strange attractors, if you can't visualize the evolution, basically. So this is for that there can be multiple strange attractors in one system, and each of them will have different positive value of Lyapunov exponent.
But why each attractor has only one exponent?
No, each attractor has one maximal Lyapunov exponent. And if it is a strange attractor, the maximal Lyapunov exponent will be positive.
Yes, okay, but I mean, it's not how the dependency on the two initial conditions washes out if I consider two initial conditions that are close to the same attractor.
So it doesn't wash out completely, just that the initial part, the way it grow, it may not be a characteristic of the attractor itself. Like the initial time when it is evolving, it may not be a characteristic of the attractor itself. But once you come close to the attractor, then how any initial condition evolves, it depends on the character of the strange attractor, on the properties of the strange attractor.
Yeah, I guess I don't see the why.
I think.
So yeah. Another initial condition close to the one that you draw.
Here, you mean, or?
Close to that?
Yeah.
Then I can approach the same attractor?
This, yeah, you can, like, it depends. Like, basin of attraction can be very complicated. It is not as simple as, like, you can divide the space into two parts. For example, like, here, do you know this system where, like, you have three magnets, one magnet here, and one magnet here. And then there is a bob or something which you, like, in the third dimension, and which you let it rotate. And then it is very difficult to predict which of the magnets it will be attracted to eventually, like which of the magnets it will settle down to. So this is because all the three magnets, the basin of attraction of all the three magnets are very complicated. They're not as simple as you can divide something like that, that okay, this will be the basin of attraction of this, or this region, it will be attracted to this. You can't do that. So you can see figure, like there are pictures on the web, you can see that they are very complicated, like a structure in the basin of attraction. So it is impossible to predict that due to that, which magnet it will settle down to.
My question is, suppose that you know that two couples of initial conditions will go to the same attractor.
Yeah.
Then they will show the Lyapunov exponent, right?
Yeah, that is right. Just that I was saying the initial part, when it is going towards the attractor, for that part, the rate of divergence may not be a characteristic of the attractor itself. So it may vary slightly. Like, I'm not saying it will drastically vary, as long as it lies in the basin of attraction of the strange attractor, both the initial conditions. Even if you do this, the exponent will not drastically vary. But just to make sure that you are actually calculating the sensitivity to initial conditions on the strange attractor, it is best to do that. But you can, even if you do this, you are not going to get some random number. You will be very, very close to the actual Lyapunov exponent of the system as well, actually. Like, you can actually try the simulation of Lorentz model, finding the Lyapunov exponent and maximal Lyapunov exponent, and see how actually it differs. It may not be a lot different, but I can't be sure about higher dimensional systems, how it will affect things. Like, the other thing is, like, there can be unstable periodic orbits in the phase space. Here, for example, there is an unstable limit cycle, for example, which is there in the Lorentz model. So if you start with very, very close to this unstable limit cycle, for example, the initial rate of divergence of the two initial conditions will depend on the, like, eigenvalues of the fixed point, unstable fixed point, or the unstable limit cycle, actually. So in the course, we actually found the eigenvalues of the Jacobian matrix for unstable fixed points and fixed points, right? So if they are positive, if the real part of the eigenvalue is positive, then it is unstable. So that real part, if you are very close to an unstable limit cycle, obviously any initial condition will get diverged away from there. But how two initial conditions diverges when you are close to an unstable fixed point or a limit cycle will be a property of the eigenvalues of that limit cycle or fixed point, right? So that's why I am saying that you don't know what all structures are there in the phase space, what all unstable things are there in the phase space, and they can be influencing things. So since these Lyapunov exponents are properties of these attractors, it is best to come close to the attractor and then compute the Lyapunov exponent numerically. And this, since we also talked about, like, Hamiltonian systems do not have any attractors, right? You remember we talked about that? Since these attractors have to be dissipative, actually. and Hamiltonian systems are conservative. The divergence of the phase-space velocity is zero in Hamiltonian systems. So that poses another problem in Hamiltonian systems. Like, you can still calculate Lyapunov exponents. You can do it for any pair of trajectories, theoretically. Like, nobody is stopping you. But, like, since Lyapunov exponents characterize the sensitivity of initial conditions on an attractor, like, since we don't have an attractor in Hamiltonian systems, that is slightly a problem. So it is too much dependent on initial conditions.
Which I think I understood the question, right? What I was asking is that if you start on that attractor, you take two pairs of initial conditions.
Okay, yeah. But
the idea is, now what we are claiming is that both of them will give the same Lyapunov exponent. Why is that?
So, that is the thing that every character.
I think probably it is because they are evolving with the same deterministic equations, but yeah
they are evolving, but
it's not very obvious.
Overall, there is exponential divergence, but the exact number, like overall, there might be some variation. It is not completely like you will have exactly the same number. It's not going to be that. There will be small variation, though the best is to average out as well. Like overall, for example, if it is 1.3 or something like that, then if you do multiple simulations with different two pairs of initial conditions, you will see a small variance around 1.3. Like, it won't be very large, like it won't be like 0.5 to 3.5 or something, but around 1.3, maybe from 1.25 to 1.35, just roughly saying. So there will be a small variance. So that's why it is best to also like take an average, like take several pairs of initial conditions, evolve them, calculate this lambda, and then take the average in the end. So that will characterize. So you are right, like, it will not be exactly same. Like, every time you do it, it will not be exactly same using the linear fit model for this part of the graph. But there will be small variance. It will not be a huge variance if you are talking about the same attractor.
Yeah, maybe we can discuss it later. So, but I mean, that variance to me that it's mostly because of like how you calculate it numerically. Not really. I mean, yeah, why are they like widely different?
So, for example, if you take a fixed point, a stable fixed point, and if you calculate the Jacobian and the eigenvalues, the way any in the local neighborhood of that fixed point, the eigenvalues of the Jacobian are independent of the initial condition you take. Like, think about that. Like, since just these strange attractors, like there is an analogy there. Just like you have fixed points, just like you have limit cycles, those are attractors if they are stable. Similarly, you have strange attractors. And you can study it like in a similar way of linearization, in the sense that take two initial conditions, like, okay. So it is like you take two initial conditions, evolve them, and study the, using the linearization also, you can get the, at every point, like when we linearized fixed points, at the fixed points, the velocity was zero. But here, that won't be zero, but still, you can do it at every step. And overall, the matrix, the Jacobian matrix that you will get at every point on the attractor can also be used to find the Lyapunov exponent, actually. So that Jacobian matrix, like, it will slightly, like, what will be the eigenvalues of the Jacobian matrix? It will slightly depend on where exactly are you on the attractor. But overall, on an average, like, the variance won't be very high. So for this system, like if anyone is interested in. This is the paper you can see with where they have found like three strange attractors. There was a paper by two authors in 1982, I guess, where they found two attractors in this system. And then this is another paper I found where they have reported three attractors in the same system. And they have also calculated the Lyapunov exponent, which are slightly different for each of the attractors, in case anyone is interested. Like the title is Multiple Attractor in Newton-Lipkin-Lipnik System, Peak-to-Peak Dynamics and Chaos Control. So the thing is, like, for the Lyapunov spectrum, like, you can take a blob of initial conditions near the strange attractor, and if the radius is very, very small of this, and if you evolve it, they are going to get stretched in one direction, like, and squeezed in another direction, like, so you like to, I'm not giving an exact algorithm to compute, so we talked about maximal Lyapunov exponent, but if you have an n-dimensional system, you can have a Lyapunov spectrum of n numbers, actually. So in the sense that just for fixed points for three dimensions, for example, you have three different directions, three eigenvalues. In some eigendirection, it may be converging. In some eigendirection, it may be diverging. Likewise, for a strange attractors, like if you take like this strange attractor, there can be n directions, and the direction will be changed as you go on evolving on the strange attractor. But n directions, and in there can be some directions in which you are converging on the strange attractor, and then there can be some direction on which you are diverging. So there will be overall a Lyapunov spectrum, like you can compute a Lyapunov spectrum of n numbers for an n-dimensional strange attractor. So for that, theoretically, like you take a blob, you evolve it. So this, you take a spherical blob, and then as you evolve, it will become ellipsoid with, in some axis, it will be converging, like squeezing, and in other axis, it will be stretching. So how the different axes evolve, basically, of that sphere, how the different axes, the different radius associated with the ellipsoid evolve, that is dependent on the Lyapunov spectrum. So in the direction where Lyapunov number is negative, the axis will get squeezed. And in the direction where Lyapunov number is positive, the axis will get elongated. So let like E I hat be an orthonormal vectors of this spherical blob that we have considered. Of delta x, that is the like the two the way they evolve these equations will be and m would be the Jacobian evaluated at x naught point of the a space. So then you can diagonalize this, find the eigenvectors, and correspondingly like change these orthonormal vectors to the eigenvectors, and each of the numbers So how each of the axes will evolve, like the distance here, will depend on these numbers of the Lyapunov spectrum. Yeah.
So at least in, you know, normal phase space, you know, with X's and P's, there's not really a clear metric to pick, because I could pick a different set of canonical variables and that would change the metric a bunch. I guess my question is, how do we know that these Lyapunov exponents don't depend on the specific coordinate system we've chosen and they're actually a property of the system?
Yeah, that is right. Like, it is difficult to say that. So as there are methods to calculate the Lyapunov exponent, but that question, like I also had, and the methods that I saw didn't really address that question exactly, like finding the eigendirections exactly in which. So overall, they do it multiple times and average it out, something like that, using the Gram-Schmidt tree orthonormalization procedure. But that exact figure, like, is difficult, like, to understand. Like, there can be different coordinate system and they don't really correspond to the eigendirections. So as you evolve the system, like, it will be stressed a lot in the eigendirection where, in which, like, there is divergence. And understanding what is happening what in the other axis is difficult, because one direction takes over whenever you evolve. So you need to re-orthonormalize your vectors and then evolve it again and do this process several times and average it out to get those numbers. And there are several methods, and all the methods actually do not yield the exact same set of numbers. So that is an ambiguity in this, actually, like, which has not been completely resolved.
So Lyapunov exponents are not invariant under symplectomorphisms.
I'm sorry, Lyapunov exponents are not?
Invariant under symplectomorphisms. Is that one way to say that?
I mean
that, you know, saying two points are close by in phase space doesn't really, at least in, again, classical phase space with X's and P's and stuff, that doesn't really make sense, because I could do a different, I could find a different set of canonical variables, and then that their metric distance in the Euclidean sense is just completely different. I'm just wondering, if we're using this Euclidean metric, does it really, to define the Lyapunov exponents, how do I know that, you know, they aren't also sensitive to this particular coordinate system I chose? Because, you know, in normal Hamiltonian mechanics, everything that kind of makes sense to talk about is invariant under a symplectomorphism.
Yeah.
But it's not clear to me that these Lyapunov exponents have that feature.
In Hamiltonian systems, yeah, they are much more dependent on initial conditions, because in Hamiltonian systems, you don't have an attractor. If you are just specifically talking about Hamiltonian systems, these Lyapunov exponents are much more dependent on the set of initial conditions that you are choosing, actually. But in dissipative systems, it is slightly better, because...
But if I pick the same set of initial conditions and I use a different coordinate system to represent them, how do I know I'm going to get the same Lyapunov exponent? That's mainly my question.
In dissipative systems or Hamiltonian systems?
Let's say Hamiltonian, because I'm more familiar with those. But or dissipative, if you think that's easier. I'll leave it up to you.
So we can go through the, like, I have also specifically not computed Lyapunov exponent spectrum. But I have read it theoretically, like, this is the way you do it. But I had the similar question, like, what if I choose a different set of orthonormal vectors, actually, and how it will impact the exact value of the Lyapunov spectrum that we'll get. So that question I also had. So we can go through some literature, since I have computed, like, this maximal Lyapunov exponent, but not exactly the Lyapunov exponent spectrum. So maybe through computations, we can try to get some intuition what is exactly happening. So we can do that together if you're interested.
But I means it's like you start with some metric, like we start with the Euclidean thing, and then if you make a coordinate transformation, correspondingly your metric will change. So then, once you fix one thing, I don't think there should be an ambiguity. But the first choice, that why did we choose this Euclidean thing in that specific coordinate system is where there is ambiguity. But I think comparison wise, I don't know if.
Yeah, for maximal Lyapunov exponent, it does not matter a lot because ultimately the direction in which it is diverging takes over. So for maximal Lyapunov exponent, it does not matter a lot which norm you are choosing, what is your coordinate, as if your system is chaotic. But for the exact values of Lyapunov spectrum, I guess it may be slightly dependent on that. So that's why whenever you look at any books, how to compute, you will see that they will say that average it out over several initial conditions, so that these things that can make some difference do not have an impact a lot. Like if the variance is a lot in your like computations over different initial conditions or different norms, then there is a problem. But if the variance is very small, for example, then there's not much of an issue. Does that make sense? So that was about Lyapunov exponent. We talked about limit cycles, and I also said like we saw a stable limit cycle in Van der Pol oscillator, and I had told that there can be unstable limit cycles as well in systems. So any idea how to find, how can we say that, okay, this is an unstable, like this is an unstable limit cycle, because we can't linearize it in the same way we do it for fixed points, right? Or for fixed points, the velocity at the fixed point is zero. But for limit cycle, it is continuously evolving if we start with any initial condition. So if we know a limit cycle, for example, in a system, how do we know that it is stable or not, at least theoretically? Any guesses? Does anyone know about Poincaré maps by any chance? Okay, so what you can do here, like if you have, for example, so, and if this is a periodic orbit or some trajectory, even if it is not closing, and if I take a surface of section, then it will intersect this, then the trajectory will intersect it at multiple points, right? So if it is a periodic orbit, it will always intersect this surface of section at two specific points. If I take a surface of section which is transverse to this periodic orbit, so consider only one direction, either going upwards or downwards, like rather than both. So in that case, you will get only one intersection with the surface of section. So the idea is that you can study the stability of this periodic orbit using the stability of this fixed point on the surface of section.
How do we define the surface of section?
So, like if you have three coordinates, x, y, z, like you can take z equals to constant, for example. Like what should be this constant value, you can independently like study x and y as a function of time and z, or x, y and z as a function of time, and see at what what should be a constant value here such that this intersects. We should make sure that we are not taking a surface of section here or something like that. So intersection, so that kind of intuition you can build using studying the time series of the system actually. So can you see that? Like if this limit cycle is unstable, for example, any perturbation, if I start with any point here, it will go out. So similar, like using this method actually. So this mapping is called Poincaré map, basically. When you so Poincaré map is a concept like hugely used in Hamiltonian systems actually, like to study chaos there. Formalizing, like we will be using Poincaré maps and also plotting it in one of the tutorials. We will be studying more about Poincaré maps next week in Hamiltonian systems, and in tutorial 4 we will be plotting Poincaré map for a Hamiltonian system. Suppose we are just studying three-dimensional, for example. This is using so this basically links n-dimensional continuous time dynamical system to n-1 dimensional discrete time systems. And it is always easier to study a lower dimensional system, whether discrete or continuous. So it is very much useful in that sense. Consider this dynamical system and let S you can see that the Poincaré map is a mapping from the surface of section to itself. And we need to make sure that we are considering the intersections in one direction, not the both the directions actually. So in that case, if x star is a fixed point of map, that is P of x star equals to x star, if you see this, then it will imply that x star is a part of closed trajectory in the n dimensional system or a closed orbit. Right, this is obvious to everyone.
Star is part of a closed orbit.
Like what I mean that on Poincaré map, if you see that if you start with a, if you just consider this map, if you see that this map a point on the Poincaré map, if there is a point that maps to itself, then it has to map like this point should be a part of closed orbit in this n-dimensional.
Xk is part of a closed orbit. Yeah, that with limit cycle is the closed orbit.
Yeah, limit cycle is.
So any xk is part because xk.
Not always like you can have some trajectories like this, for example, like evolving, and if I take a surface of section, there will be multiple intersections. So like if I take a surface of section here, for example.
Okay, I see. Means this is defined for general, not only for limit cycles.
Not only for limit cycles, yeah. Like I was just motivating the study of Poincaré maps through limit cycle. But in general, like Poincaré maps, you can study it for any system, take any constant surface, and study the intersections any trajectory makes with the surface, actually, subsequent intersections. So you can see that, like, it is easier to see that, okay, if the trajectory is a closed orbit, then it will lead to a fixed point of the Poincaré map. Vice versa is also true, that if you see a fixed point on the Poincaré map, it corresponds to, there exists a closed orbit in the n-dimensional space. I think it is not obvious. Oh, okay.
If we have xk plus 1, which is same as xk, means
yeah,
the finite point, it means that the orbit is coming back. So that point will be the point where the orbit closes.
Yeah, that is right. That is right, yeah. Is it clear to everyone else?
But in that example, there's no fixed point.
Which example?
Number one, yeah, because it's a cycle of order two. Right?
No, so that's what I told, that you need to consider either upward direction or downward direction of the flow.
Yeah.
You have to see, okay, what is the sign of x dot, y dot, or so if you just consider one direction, then it will be a fixed point.
Yeah.
So if there is a limit, I had showed a limit cycle in a a period to limit cycle in Lorentz model the other day. So for that, you will have 2 points. Like if there are 2 points which alternate between them in the Poincaré map, that implies that there exists a limit, a period to limit cycle or period to closed orbit, for example.
Yeah.
So on the other hand, like if you take a surface of section and if it just does a random thing, like if the intersections are random, then it mostly corresponds to chaos in the higher dimensional system, basically. But there is one more case that can happen apart from fixed point or period two. There's something called quasi-periodicity. For example, if your system is a torus, if the dynamics of your system takes place on a torus, and there are two frequencies associated with your system, omega 1 and omega 2. Suppose the dynamics happens on torus and a trajectory does something like this. And if there are two frequencies associated with this, then if the ratio is rational, then can you see that the trajectory will close on itself after a few? And if the ratio is irrational, then what will happen?
Fill the whole thing.
It will fill up the whole torus, right? So in that case, if I take a surface of section here, for example, what will I see on the surface of section? A circle, right? So fixed points will yield, like Poincaré map, a closed orbit will yield a fixed point. A period n orbit, closed orbit, or a period n limit cycle will yield n points, which will evolve one after the other. But if it is a quasi-periodic system, then we will see something like this, basically. So that is also not chaos. The thing is, here you can, so I had talked about three conditions in the first lecture, like there should be boundedness, aperiodicity, and sensitivity to initial condition. So you can see that a trajectory on this, motion on this torus is bounded, right? It is aperiodic when these ratios are irrational, but there is no sensitivity to initial condition on the torus. We'll discuss more on that, but I was just saying that all the three conditions is useful to see that, like, you can't take out one of the three conditions from those three and define chaos. So this is one of the examples where you see that there is aperiodicity and boundedness, but no sensitivity, so no chaos on a torus. Thank you.